What are you taping over something? Okay. Today is what, March 20 what?
March 25th, 1984. This is an interview tape with Joel and Gretchen Oines.
Hi.
Who have been associated for the past several years with Holden Village. Particularly are we interested in the two special projects in which they were involved, that having to do with Lucerne and the Tocoa concept at 25 Mile Creek. When were you at Lucerne, Joel?
Well, we're having this interview with Bill Dirks, my father-in-law. That's the first voice that you heard here. He's sitting here with a Rainier beer, attempting to take this interview.
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Way to go, Gretchen. When we first arrived at Lucerne, what was it, September 1st, 1980. And our job then was to work with Bill and Wanda Brooks in running the restaurant and closing up Holden's operation there for the winter season. So we lived there for the month of September, and did all the things that were required of people who ran a resort. We pumped gas for tourists, and we cleaned the Johns. I made some hamburger buns from scratch that achieved a very immediate notoriety among the workers in the valley. They still talk about it to this day. And we shut down the restaurant there, and it was actually the last time the restaurant was open to the public, and that was probably the last day of September 1984. And Bill and Wanda Brooks had departed a week before, and Gretchen and I then... 1980, excuse me.
Yeah, 1980.
You're right, Bill. 1980. And then we came up to the village, and at that point, Gretchen was... Were you just the nurse? At that point? You have to speak louder, Gretchen. Okay. You were there for the nurse. I was there as village pastor for that winter. We waited. We worked that time, that winter, and into the, well, I think into December. I worked with Craig Brandis and Warner Jansen on putting together a proposal to the Forest Service for a long-term operational plan for the Lucerne area.
How is it that we were involved in Lucerne?
Well, I have a little notebook with all sorts of history of the Lucerne Resort, as was told to me by Dylan Henderson, habitué and long-term resident of Chelan. And what had happened is that the last owner and operator of the resort, when faced with closure by the Forest Service, just up and gave the property, not the land, but the improvements, the buildings, to Holden Village. Holden Village had operated it for, I think, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I think about 3 years.
Three summers on a year-to-year basis with the Forest Service. And the Forest Service had now gotten their act together and was wanted to issue a 20-year permit to develop it. And so they let it out for public, they let out a prospectus for public application, or for public inspection and for bids and proposals. So Holden, I think we were maybe the only one that submitted one. Ooh, but we worked on a proposal that would allow a Christian community to be there. There are copies of that proposal probably still floating around that details it. Essentially, it was a way to have a Christian community that would serve the public and somehow operate and see their ministry, see their serving the public as a ministry. And it would be a challenge to go beyond just the selling of gas and beer to tourists and turning it into a really Christian ministry. That was one of the most challenging and maybe the most difficult thing in envisioning the future operation of Lucerne. I had a partner in working on it, an architectural individual named Craig Brandis, who's now, he lives in Vancouver, Washington. He and I did drawings and wrote text along with Warner Jansen for the fall of 1980. And we finished a proposal and submitted it to the Forest Service, and we were the only proposal submitted, and Forest Service turned it down. The city of Chelan appealed for us, and to make a long story short, from Washington, D.C., the decision came from the Forest Service. The head forester decided no, Holden would not get the permit, and Holden would be instructed to take down the buildings that it owned there, which it proceeded to do, and has just about completed it at this date.
Since you were involved in the putting together a proposal for Lucerne, you should have some idea of what exactly the village was trying to do at Lucerne. Can you briefly tell us that?
Well, the village probably had a couple of different objectives in handling Lucerne. First of all, it had been a gift, and Holden, when it receives gifts, takes them seriously and tries to make the best use of them as possible. Holden is the result of gift after gift after gift, and so when the Lucerne property was given, they intended to put it to the best and highest use they could. Holden also thought it would be advantageous for them to have control of the facilities down at the boat landing. It would allow for a lot of things like emergency overnight staying when the road was too bad to get people back up to the village after the boat had stopped. It would allow for people to take short breaks from the village and head down. It would also just improve the lines of communication with the lake community. Holden would then be able to participate more actively in the life on the lake. There'd be more interchange between Lucerne and Stehekin and other points on the lake when Holden at Lucerne. Now, maybe you're thinking of some others, Bill.
Well, Lucerne has always been considered a kind of a gateway to the whole Railroad Creek Valley,
mm-hmm.
and eventually getting into the Glacier Wilderness area,
mm-hmm.
And so it would have something to do with the hikers and backpackers that come through there. What was it that the village itself had intended in this proposal to help that part of the public using that area?
Well, one of the things in the proposal was to be an interpretive center. Another point was to a very practical service was to be a taxi service from the lake up to the trailhead, which was a mile beyond Holden Village. We had also talked about, included in an interpretive center was I'm trying to remember what we wrote in the proposal 3 years ago, but I think it included some kind of mountaineering crafts such as log building and other sorts of skills that were required of the early settlers in the area.
It has something to do with introducing the...
Can I play with that?
No. I just took a piece of paper away from it. it had something to do with introducing the transient people, such as hikers and so forth, into the what made up the geological and environmental part of that whole River Creek Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So that the trail itself could become much more meaningful to someone who was hiking through.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the museum was designed or was to be designed for that use.
That's right. We were going to have the Mine Museum at Lucerne, a museum which has now been built at Holden. Yeah. You remember that pretty well. I've forgotten a lot of those details.
Well,
it's all in the proposal, so you can...
Yeah, that's right. The proposal's on file in the village.
Yeah. Nice, a lot of nice drawings. I hand-lettered all the text, and I think it looks pretty good, but...
Basically, do you remember what the Forest Service was objecting to in their lack of acceptance of.
Well, just between you and me, Bill, and whoever, whatever nut's going to listen to this.
Innuendo. Innuendo.
There wasn't much that they actually said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I never read any official official reason for the rejection. Did you, Gretchen?
Mm-mm.
I have a suspicion that they were fearful of an organized religious group administering. I don't think they really said that. Warner took care of all the dealings directly with the Forest Service, and once we knew it was refused for good, I kind of lost interest in the project.
All right.
I had to go on to other things.
I guess this was a project that Holden Village put too much of itself into, and therefore was unacceptable to, at least in the eyes of the Forest Service, to general public consumption.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's hard to know.
It was too bad because it would have helped the whole valley and all those coming through the valley to become more involved and more interested and acquainted with the historical aspect of the Railroad Creek Valley, which has quite a history. It goes back to the explorations by Holden, this man named Holden, from whom the village was named.
Joshua Holden or Isaiah Holden.
Yeah. And going back to his time and has some
Euripides
historical value for anyone who is interested in that type of thing. But after that, what happened to you?
Well, we came down with leprosy. No, that's not true. Well, there were a lot of things going on at the village. We were involved in the winter community. Craig Brandis won that. The final results came through. He went on to bigger and better things in Vancouver. Now he's a computer. He's in computer school. He had hoped to be able to build log buildings down there. And we had gone as far as to cut down 20 beautiful logs out of the Holden Village woods that have since been used for other things, I think. So we worked on our other assignments in the village. I was a carpenter as well as being village pastor. Gretchen was a nurse. And we began to talk about other alternatives. I began to see in retrospect that Lucerne might run the risk of being a ministry that only sold beer and gas to tourists. To make it more than that would have been the challenge. And we began to kick around ways and ideas for ministries in addition to the one at Holden Village proper that could be, that would make use of our interests and skills and, are you going to, Gretchen? Sleep well. Make use of our skills and to kind of tie together the interests of a number of people. Holden had always been talking about a farm. As far as my understanding is that for many years previous to 1980, there was the hope that Holden could have a farm and somehow be able to raise some of the food that it consumed up there, have another place to practice the kind of community that Holden had become known for. But that just the idea of just raising food to save Holden money was not reason enough to get involved in and to make the investment in running a farm.
You're talking about a new way of looking at the whole farm proposition. Can you continue that along that direction in your thinking and talking here and acquaint us with that particular concept?
Okay, well, as I said, Holden had long been thinking about the concept unofficially and through many, many years had always said, well, it's not reason enough to get involved in farming. When we arrived there, Gretchen and I had a real strong interest in rural life and in agrarian lifestyles, in the responsibilities all citizens have for farming, partly due to a book my brother-in-law Bob Hammersley gave me back in 76 called The Unsettling of America by Wendell Berry that was one of these conversion experiences that people have rarely in their life when they read books.
And we were very, very interested in pursuing agriculture as a ministry, not just as a means of livelihood, but as a way of really exercising stewardship over the earth. Fuller treatment, of course, is in the book by Wendell Berry, and it's one I heartily recommend to anyone who is interested in land or land use issues. That was what got us going and produced our intense interest in rural communities and in agriculture. On a similar track, John Schramm, on our arrival there, he left the village to minister somehow and be with his father, who was dying of what?
Alzheimer's disease.
And was faced with a lot of frustration in finding facilities that would care for him. And began thinking about, wouldn't it be nice if there were smaller family-style communities that could take people like that, who didn't need a lot of intensive medical care, but a place where they could be loved and appreciated in their last days. And that was especially true when John's dad died and his mother was in need of some sort of supervision and care. And so John began to pursue the idea of a rural community from the viewpoint of hospitality. And so the old Holden idea of farm, John's experience need for hospitality, dealing with his folks and our interests in agriculture, all kind of converged at the same time, and we began talking about a Holden farm, which could be a ministry. We suggested that the idea had fleshed out enough that it was the board meeting in June of 1981 when the farm idea was first suggested, and the corporation passed, what was it, a resolution to study and to write a more detailed proposal about a farm operated or that could be operated by Holden Village. And that was in June of 81, and Ellen Gamrath appointed three people to do that research and to brainstorm and come up with a specific proposal.
Who were those people?
Well, myself and Lisa Broker, who had been the gardener at Holden Village and at that time was, I think, working for the Forest Service or the state fish hatchery in Leavenworth.
I think that's right.
Yeah. And a woman named Cheryl Clavin, who had worked for Jim Siefkas in the ALCDS, DSMA, I think, and she had been a prober in dealing. She had done some research and work in exploring ministry to the elderly. She lived in Wisconsin. So Lisa and Cheryl and I were assigned the task of writing this proposal over the next year, presenting it to the board in the summer of 82. So we did that. Summer of 81, Cheryl came out with Jim Siefkas. I think he had something to do with the director for new ministries. I don't even know the title. But I think Lisa came up, and Lisa and Cheryl and I and John and Jim Siefkas brainstormed and came up with a brief statement of purpose. In the fall, Cheryl came back, flew back. I think she was 7 months, 8 months pregnant at the time. We gave her Lisa and Cheryl and I toured two communities in north of Seattle, Prag Tree Farm, it wasn't a religious community, but was an alternative agricultural community. They were at that location, the TILF magazine for the organic agriculture in the Northwest or biological agriculture in the Northwest was published there. And then we visited Manna Farm, which was a farm community begun by three Christian Reform couples that had come from Grand Rapids seven years before. We had visited both of those, and Cheryl endured the car ride with frequent bathroom stops. I guess that's the
par for the course.
Yeah, when you're that pregnant, and we did a lot of brainstorming then. Cheryl wasn't there to do a lot of the writing, and Lisa gets headaches. The minute she picks up a pencil. So it fell to me to do a lot of writing of the proposal, and I did it in consultation with Warner and John Schramm. And that detailed proposal is on file someplace with the corporation, with the papers. I think
Are you the historian, Bill?
To a certain extent.
Yeah, you should probably have a copy of that someplace. In addition to that, we produced a one-page brochure.
2 pages.
Yeah, it's one page on both sides.
Both sides filled.
Yeah, sort of.
On what is called the Toccoa Principle. Where did the name come from?
Toccoa was John Schramm's brainstorm. He had thought the term would be appropriate for other endeavors. He had other kinds of ministries he had been thinking of, and his arguments for the name were convincing, and we adopted that when we presented it in 82. And what we essentially what we presented was that that for a full that the farm we envisioned, or the kind of communities we envisioned, would engage in three ministries, and they would be the disciplines that made a group of people a Christian community: disciplines for wholeness. The second discipline was the discipline of hospitality, making sure your doors were open and people were welcome. And the third discipline was care of the earth. And in our interest, it was specifically agriculture. We proposed to Holden that they develop Toccoa communities in three different places, in a rural area, in an urban area, and at 25 Mile Creek, which was the Holden-owned property. It was in November of 1981 that the trustees, Cheryl and Lisa and I, were at the trustee meeting, and the trustees and Warner brainstormed about Toccoa, or brainstormed about 25 Mile Creek being a possible location. They were at the time, and even up until June, there were two reservations that I had about 25 Mile Creek. One is that because Holden owned it, there would be certain limitations on the kind of participation people would be willing to make. Long-term commitments were, I thought, would be difficult, and that's kind of proved to be the case. The other is that the location and the size of the land, and the fact that it was a real hilly site and it was removed from hospitals, meant that the kind of hospitality and agriculture we'd be able to do there would be kind of limited.
Yeah, when we talk about 25 Mile, we're talking about that part at the end of the road up from on the the west side of Lake Chelan, coming up from the city of Chelan.
South side of Lake Chelan.
South side.
South
right.
Shore.
Okay.
Now, Holden owns two parcels of land there, an acre and a half with a house on it, and 5 acres that they use for a parking lot for many years.
Used to be an orchard until they
tore out the trees.
Yeah, tore out the trees for more parking, because the trees were pretty well over-matured, I would say.
We could have used the trees.
Yeah. But, yeah, they're still usable, but they needed the parking place more than anything else. Anyhow, that's
our first reaction of the committee was that 25 Mile Creek would not be appropriate.
Yeah.
We talked about it for a long time and realized the kind of investment Holden would have to make in a farm and in land, and the fact that they already owned the land, became a fairly persuasive argument to try it. And the argument that it fit, it was possible to practice the disciplines that were described on the one sheet brochure in more detail in the proposal at that site. We decided that we'd recommend that site would be the immediate expression, and when we recommended that, we also had to recommend certain financial commitment for 25 Mile Creek on the part of Holden Village. And what's that? You want me to speed up?
No, you're doing fine.
Okay. Anyone out there? Hello?
Yeah, we're doing fine.
Okay, we asked for a financial commitment from Holden for 25 Mile Creek's development, and that was determined. We were as detailed as we could, figuring how much it was Lisa and Brian Hintz, Jim Martin, I should say a little bit about how the community was assembled. I'm real proud of the first community there. There were all sorts. The balance of interests and skills was perfect.
You were kind of the head of that community, right?
Well, we were head only in that we were the first people to commit ourselves to being there.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately after that, or maybe simultaneously, Lisa Broker said yes, she would live at the community. And so right away we began the process of selecting other members for the community by consensus. The fourth member to join, and Gretchen was pregnant at this time, so we knew we'd have either a boy or a girl to join us involuntarily in June. The fourth member, after Lisa, Gretchen, and myself, was Brian Hintz, who is from from Wisconsin. His father and uncle were dairy farmers, and he had been in the Philippines in the Peace Corps for 2 years, and he was a head driver at the time in the village, and it was winter of the 81-82 winter, and he said, yes, I'd be real interested in working on that project. He's kind of shy, and it took him a little while, and Lisa was finally able to establish contact with him and determined that he was really interested. After he was committed to that, then Jim Martin, who was up there for a winter program that spring, also declared his interest and willingness to be there for a year. So we had a community of five adults then. And at that time, Larry Rain, who had come, he came in January of 81. I think that's right, or maybe it was in January of 82. Anyway, he had also declared an interest in that, and Larry was a carpenter. So we ended up with Lisa, who was a gardener, Brian, who was also a gardener and a farmer, Jim, who was a person very active in global concerns, who was verbal and literary, and also a pretty hard worker and interested in all the details of community building, and then Larry, who was a carpenter. All were committed to going down there before the summer came. In March, I think Brad and Althea Sundahl, who had been living there, moved out of the house, and Deb Cazell, Leon's name. They were from the Dakotas. And they moved down, left Holden, and moved down there to live in the house for a couple months. And then they moved out in April, and Brian Hintz and Gretchen and I moved down in May, Brian a week before we did. And at that point, we were living down there, getting a garden planted and preparing the last bits of the proposal for the board. And at that point, we were living down there, getting a garden planted and preparing the last bits of the proposal for the board.
This was in spring of...
81.
81, okay.
No,
82.
Spring of 82.
Yeah, 82, right. Okay.
We decided that we'd go ahead and plant the garden, and if the board decided not to develop it, it would be just a good thing for whoever happened to live there, and you could, a community could exist there without a whole lot of investment, and it could be closed down, or...
If the board did approve it, we would have lost a lot of time, and we would have lost a whole season for gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went ahead and planted the garden. Prepared. John Schramm came down, and with Warner and John, we worked out a financial estimate for the operation and submitted that in June when I went up with the finished proposal. The board approved it. And immediately upon the approval, Lisa Broker and Jim Martin joined the community the first week in July, and we began to work hard.
Yeah, I'm glancing right now at the trustees' minutes of that particular time in June of 1982, and just for the sake of our any listener to this tape, that we reiterate once more what the three principles involved in the whole Tocoa idea that you were trying to establish there at 25 Mile Creek, according to the motion I'm looking at, and as well as the brochure in front of me, that the first of them is the disciplines for wholeness. You talked about that a little bit, such as that the participants would be bound together in Christian discipline and in the struggle for wholeness and reconciliation as a community of faith. This is right?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah,
that's right.
And the second is hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
Live out an intentional hospitality prepared to witness.
Mm-hmm.
How did you see that as you look back now upon it?
How did we see hospitality?
Yeah.
How
did you try to put that into effect at 25 Mile?
Well,
by the way, perhaps we ought to tell the listeners that you finally came up with a name that is stuck with you now.
Mm-hmm.
The name for that particular place, instead of calling it 25 Mile Creek, you call it what?
Tocoa Landing.
Tocoa Landing. Yeah. Who came up with that idea?
That was also Jen Schramm's suggestion.
Oh.
And it was, seemed okay to us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a place, a landing, because that's where the boat...
It's marine.
Puts in.
Yeah.
And you've got all kinds of marinas around there and so forth, and as well as the whole Tocoa idea. Well, okay, go ahead now. That's where you are, and how are you going to get to the place where you can practice hospitality and really put it into...
Yeah, well, we knew that we had originally planned that the first year of operation, we would be developing Tocoa. And because the house was small, we were already living to capacity. We had one person living in a trailer that didn't have any water running to it. We found out in the winter because the pipes froze. We knew that we wouldn't be able to practice residential hospitality, having people live with us long term, until we could build another structure. So we resolved to practice hospitality any way that we could, and that took a lot of different forms. One, it was hospitality toward the people going up and coming back from Holden. We would sometimes make phone calls for them, or when luggage invariably got lost, we'd track that down for people. There were some people that just didn't have another place to stay, or hadn't prepared for life at 25 Mile Creek before they caught the boat, and we often had them sleeping on our floor in our yard. We also worked hard at establishing contact with the neighbors, and church membership. Jim Martin participated actively in a peace and justice group, which I think broadly defined hospitality would include action taken on behalf of people suffering and oppressed in other countries. We also That winter, I think it was the Christmas of 1982, there was a Christian mission in Wenatchee that needed a lot of help and assistance, and we were able to go down and supply some work and firewood and lumber to keep that place going. And that's a place that serves transient people and some of the most dispossessed that come through Wenatchee, and we've been able to keep up a good and healthy support for that place over the years. So okay. You ready to quit?
Well, Joe, let's go on ahead and look at this third principle. We're talking about the care of creation. As I understand that this whole business at the 25 miles, the property that the whole village has there, that it wasn't all that great as far as any agricultural use. And I suppose this is what you fellows had in mind when you're talking about the care of creation and mm-hmm. what we do with it in order to fulfill our stewardship of God's creation to us.
Yeah. Well, one thing is very different about 25 Mile Creek or Tocola Landing than Holden. Holden was set amidst wilderness. That required a certain kind of ethic that required, well, that essentially meant that we left the land untouched, that human beings were only visitors there, no human marks or debris were left anywhere in the wilderness area that surrounded Holden Village. And so Holden was sort of a human outpost that dealt with the land most directly as wilderness. It's very different at 25 Mile Creek, where we were using the land, and that's the situation that the overwhelming majority of the land in our country is in. That is that it has to be used for something. And we were interested in exploring the ethic of using land and using it carefully and properly and in a sustainable way, in a way that wasn't able to be practiced or hadn't been talked about much at Holden Village. And so we were very interested in making use of the land, but in a way that increased its fertility, that preserved the soil, the plants, and still was able to support human life. And so we began that right away. We had an immense garden the first year. It was even bigger the second year. We began to do things to control erosion, to build up the soil, to begin to deal with our wastes directly and locally rather than putting them in the can or putting them down the tube and forgetting about it. So we developed our composting system right away, and I think that was probably the area we worked hardest at and had the most success and the most obvious progress was in the care of the earth. We built immediately that fall of 82 and into the spring of 83, or I guess it was finished in January, we built a passive solar greenhouse. We took down the schoolhouse building in Lucerne that fall, and shipped the lumber down to Chelan and used the lumber in the windows to build this greenhouse, this combination greenhouse workshop. And we built the whole thing for just about $9,000 and included all the lumber that we salvaged. We were able to begin raising winter greens and plant, we were able to start seedlings and get a jump on the season. We learned an awful lot about gardening from our neighbors who had been on the scene a few years longer and had all sorts of experience that we didn't have, experience that we could draw on. We also, Lisa and Jim, were instrumental in starting in the spring of 83 a Chelan Valley Farmers Market, and the plans are going ahead for the second year Farmers Market this summer. It was successful in that it mobilized, it gave people, the possibility of a market. It didn't make a lot of money. Nobody got rich off it, except the old farmer that brought his cherries and peaches in every week. But it was a way to, without too much of a loss, to learn the the principles and sort of some of the ins and outs of retail marketing of what we grow. It turned out that it wasn't real practical for us to grow things for Holden. Holden demanded, you know, because of its schedule and the number of people coming in, they had to buy predictable quantities weeks in advance and plan menus out weeks in advance. And we just weren't a high volume producer. So we had to kind of create our own market, and that's one of the reasons we went to this farmer's market. I think by the time the spring, the garden of the summer of 83 had about nearly an acre under cultivation, if you include all the fruit trees and the green manure we grew for our compost. The plans are now that the new house is built to do even more garden. So Tocoa has both a daily log that they started in January of this year on the recommendation of the board. They also have a photo album that collects some of their memorabilia. It has pictures of all of us.
So this is another resource for anyone interested in pursuing the subject further then.
Should be somewhere on the bookshelf down at the Tocoa House.
Yeah. Well, you and Gretchen and Micah, your almost 2-year-old son, have left Tocoa now, about 25 Mile Creek, and you're on your way back to the Midwest. Having been there now, what, 2 years?
Well, at Tocoa, nearly 2 years, yeah. Right, at Tocoa Landing.
Okay. As you look back upon your time there and your working in endeavoring to be a Christian community and to practice hospitality and take care of God's creation, as you look back upon all of that, what are the thoughts that you really want to leave behind for anyone who is going to pursue this further, who might be interested in also practicing the principle of Tocoa, either 25 Mile at Tocoa Landing or someplace else on the face of this good earth?
The future is in computers. Learn computer programming and you'll have it made.
What's that got to do with farming?
Our hope in forming the community of 25 Mile Creek was that people would come by and see it and say, wow, this is possible for me to do. What it really amounts to is building culture from the ground up. It's taking all the elements of human life and community and rearranging them. It's a way, in some ways, it's a judgment upon our society that throws things away, that entertains itself with very expensive technologies, that uses a lot of the Earth's resources and a disproportionate amount for our own pleasure and life and standard of living. It's a way to examine those critically and to say there is maybe a better, more humane, more just, more satisfying way to live, and then rearranging the elements, the hospitality, the care of the earth, the living in community, in such a way that the product, the culture that comes out, is a little more just, a little more true to the gospel, a little more celebrative, a little simpler, a little more serene, a little more shalom. There, I used it. Use the word, than the culture that we all came out of. So it is a radical sort of thing, but it is a transformation made of very simple steps. One of the things Wendell Berry says, this is maybe where I should quit too, is that there are no ends in human life. I mean, there are no goals, really. There are only means. There are only ways of doing things. And that's really where human life is tested and where its ethics and its virtue are established. Not in the things that you hope will happen or the things that you aim at, but in the way you go through your day-to-day activities, how you produce or eat your food, how you get to work, how you love your family or your community. Those are the things that somehow we have control over. Those are the things that create our reputation as a culture. Those are the things that finally give meaning to life and not the things that we aim at.
And, geez, I don't know what else to say.
It's my understanding that as you go back now from your, quote, tour of duty, unquote, at the village, touching at Lucerne and getting involved at 25 Mile Creek and the Tocoa Landing Principle, as you go back to the Midwest, that you're going to try to put some of these things into effect in what you and some others are going to try to establish back there. Is this true?
Yeah. Gretch and I are committed to Christian community in whatever form it comes. We don't necessarily feel we have to share a house with people or have to decide in advance with a group of people to move to a location and establish community. Community can emerge out of those around you. It really doesn't take a lot of preparation. It just takes a commitment to live each day in community, to live each day being hospitable, to live each day caring for the earth. And the specifics of our plan are another couple and a single fella to begin to find a farm in the Mississippi River Valley someplace and establish a community there. Community that will, within a year or two, find a ministry that will meet some local needs.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Joel.
I'm not done.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm going to cut you off here. Because we'll let people hang in the air a little bit and have their interests whetted enough to pursue it further. You've been listening to Joel Oinous and in part a little bit from Gretchen Oinous as they've
She's labored, gone to bed now.
Yeah, as they've labored for the kingdom and for the Lord Jesus and the Father in heaven through the Holden Village. And we hope that we should consider success and God's blessing upon any of your future endeavors. This has been Bill Dirks trying to keep up his end of the whole conversation. And
yeah, I hope we aren't dead before someone listens to this, dude.
Oh, well, we don't worry about that. It's for the record.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye.